The parable of the talents is perhaps one of the most intriguing parables in the Bible for a number of different reasons. One that jumps out to me is that it appears in both Matthew and Luke, which wouldn't be too uncommon. We know that both Matthew and Luke copied heavily from Mark, but this doesn't appear in Mark. There is another gospel that we think hasn't ever been found, the Q gospel, and we could think, well, maybe they copied from the Q gospel, but that doesn't match either because they are quite different from one another. There are some similarities, but there are some real differences as well. Enough differences to think, I don't think they copied from the same guy. And then to make it even more confusing, it also appears in the Gospel of the Hebrews, which is one of the Gospels that didn't make the cut into the canonized Bible. You know, the Catholics in 325 didn't make the cut. And it's the same story, but it's got a lot of different twists in that. So from that standpoint, the parable of the talents is interesting. But it has that common thread of all of the parables. And just to refresh everybody, because I've talked about the parable of the talents more than once, Cliff Notes version, real rich guy decides that he's going to go on a trip. That's a long trip, and he's going to be gone a long time, like years. And so he calls in three of his servants. And to the first servant, he gives him five talents. Now, a talent, depending on the definition and how we look at it, is probably somewhere between 400,000 and $500,000. So it's a lot of money. I mean, he's given this guy $250,000 and said, hey, I want you to watch this $250,000 for me while I'm gone and take care of it. Well, he calls in servant number two and he gives him two talents. And he says, I want you to watch over this while I'm gone. He gives him somewhere around $1,000,000. And then he calls in the third guy and he says, I want you to guard and watch this one talent for me while I'm gone. Gives him about $400,000, maybe $500,000, and says, watch this. And then he goes off on his trip. And he's gone a long time. And he came back and he calls in the first servant and he says, how did you do with the five talents I gave you? And the servant says, well, I did pretty good. You know, I invested it here and there, and, you know, we did some pretty good things. And I've taken this five talents and I've increased it to 10. And the master, oh, he's very pleased. Oh, you're a wonderful servant. Thank you. Thank you. You're so good. I'm going to even increase your responsibilities even more. And so he calls in servant number two and he says, how did you do with the two talents I gave you? And he said, well, I did pretty good. I invested them, took care of it. I watched over it. And I've been able to turn these two talents into four. And the master said, well, that's wonderful. You're a loyal and good servant. And for that, you know, I'm going to be rewarded. I'm going to give you even greater responsibilities. And then he calls in the guy that he gave one talent to. And he says, how did you do with the talent that I gave you? And he says, you know, I was kind of afraid. I didn't want to put it in the stock market. I didn't, you know. So, so I'll tell you what I did. I took it out in the backyard and I buried it in an old Folgers can. And the master says, you fool. He says, how could you do that to me? The least you could have done would have been to put it in a bank and draw an interest on it. He called him a wicked and slothful servant. Well, I don't know about you guys, but that doesn't seem very Christ-like to me. Here we got this guy, Jesus, that's walking around talking about love and peace and harmony and forgiveness and compassion, and he has this guy calling his servant slothful and wicked. Well, the title of my talk today is thoughts become things. And we're going to revisit that in a little bit. But I do want to welcome everyone here today. It's great to see all of you. We are conducting a course right now. It's called, my wife Ann is doing it. It's called E Squared. And one of our homework assignments in E Squared is we were to place a request into the universe for a blessing and expect a blessing within 48 hours. I was right over there in that little office earlier in this week, multitasking, and it occurred to me I hadn't done my little homework. I hadn't requested a blessing. So I took a few minutes and requested my blessing, and then I went back and I looked at my sermon for a while, and I wasn't happy with that for a while. And so then I went back to the next thing on my list, which was grading the homework for the Prac 1 class. And what I was mulling around in my head at the time was, how do I describe the divine creative process? I mean, you guys have got the seed, soil, plant thing. We've done that a lot of times. We've done other things, and we're going to do it again in a minute. But how can I do this a different way? And I looked down at the first paper I went to grade with Cindy Baldwin's homework paper, and this is what she had written. I've learned that the nature of being is unity with three distinct attributes, spirit, soul, and body. I call universal mind or spirit the loving spirit. And I call the soul the mechanical, mathematical, receptive field that has no choice but to say yes and bring thought into form. The loving spirit gave me an unlimited imagination, which I can use skillfully or unskillfully. Body is the result, the condition, the form, or effect as experienced by our five senses. Perfect. And I got my homework done for E Squared. That was a demonstration. That was a blessing. We couldn't have done that any better. So if we can have the slide, another way to look at it, and we've done this before, we can think of our thoughts as seeds, the law as the soil, and the output as the form as a plant. And the way that it works, and this works on the macrocosm, on the level of God, we have the God qualities of God that go into that quality of God, which is the creative medium, and out comes the manifest universe. To us individually, we have our thoughts, and we place those into the creative medium, and out comes the experiences of our lives. So if we have negative thoughts, if we are thinking things negative, and right here we have the example, I am angry. We put that into the creative medium. That's that part of God that always replies to us. And what do we have? We have an angry life. And so the angrier our life is, that just affirms what we do, so our belief in that grows even stronger. And the way we can change that is by changing the idea, come up with a new idea. I am peaceful. We put that into the creative medium, and now instead we experience more peace, more harmony, more joy in our lives. And it works on anything we do. If you believe that you cannot defeat that addiction, you put that into the creative medium, and I'll tell you, you're going to stay addicted. Whether it's from smoking, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is. If you believe firmly enough that you're never going to get that promotion, you're never going to get the raise, you're never going to get to where you want to be financially, the universe is going to give you exactly that. And until you can change your thought around that, you're going to keep getting the same results. The tricky part is, how do we change our thinking around those areas in our lives? Because those tapes are really playing loud in the back of our brain. The three points that I'm going to make today. First one is that my mind is part of the mind of God. The second is that our hidden beliefs, as well as our conscious thoughts, go into this universal subjective, which creates our experiences. And thirdly, all of this doesn't have to be hard. Doesn't have to be reading Troward by candlelight in the middle of the night. It's real easy. First of all, my mind is part of the mind of God. This is put to us in many, many, many different ways. The quantum physicists tell us that we are selecting from a quantum possibility, that there are infinite number of possibilities, and out of the quantum possibility, we are collapsing one which is our experience. Holmes talks about the world of infinite possibilities. Abraham Hicks has their own take on it. Right now in the E squared class, she calls it the infinite potential, the IP. She goes on to talk about how our brains are actually accessed with over 400,000 bits per second. Think about that. Even if we were really, really effective and we could process 10 bits per second, do the math on that, it'd take like 84 years to get through what actually comes into our senses and our brains in each second. So what happens is our brains have paths, the neural patterns, and they shorten everything down. They go back to that habitual belief. They go back to what we have, what we're familiar with what we know. But we can get around this. Also out of the, actually this is out of Foundations class, a minister by the name of Reverend Marlene Oakes. This is one of the quotations they have in there. Not only do our conscious choices go into our own subconscious mind for implementation, but they also go into the great subjective mind of God, or the universal subjective of which we are a part. All the power of the universe is available for the idea seeds that we plant in the subjective. You might say that the creative power within us is our subjective subconsciousness, and we are also surrounded and filled with the creative power of the universal subjective. In other words, when we open ourselves up, we do indeed have that divine power behind us, with us, and within us. A lady by the name of Sherry Severini from Smiths Creek, Michigan, tells a great story about once when she was on vacation. They, her family, her husband and her kids, were headed off to a family reunion, and they decided to take their Winnebago and go a week early and do some traveling around the Midwest and have a great vacation. They happened to be in Chicago when they started smelling something, smelled like it was burning. And so they stopped, and her husband got out and looked around, and he says, there's something really hot by one of the back wheels. Well, this was a very special Winnebago. It was made on a Freightliner frame. And one of the reasons they selected that is there were over 400 Freightliner dealers throughout the U.S. that they could go to and have work performed on their mobile home or their RV. They thought, well, we could see if there's a chance. We're in Chicago. You would certainly think that there would be a Freightliner in Chicago, but as her husband pointed out, it's Sunday afternoon. The chances of them being open are pretty slim. But she said, well, let's go ahead. Let's just put it into the GPS and see what happens. And they ticky-ticked into the GPS, and boom, up it came, and it said that there's a Freightliner dealer and was less than 10 miles away. Wow, what luck is that? Let's give it a try. So they followed the directions that the GPS gave them, and they drove down the freeway X miles, and then they got off at this exit, and they went a mile and a half down this road, and they're limping along, going slower and slower, more and more concerned about the heat in the back of the RV, but the surroundings were like real industrial. It was warehouses, and it wasn't like, you know, a commercial area at all. And they got in deep, and there were no people, there was nobody around. They came around a corner following the directions of the GPS, and the little lady at the GPS came on and said, "You have reached your destination." Well, they looked around, and there's no Freightliner place, there's nothing. And there weren't even any people. Oh, the GPS must not work. So they said, "Well, what do we do next?" And the guy was hesitant to drive much further. He didn't know what to do. They looked out, and there was a guy. Looked like he was standing next to a car. And she thought, well, maybe this guy can give us some directions or something. So she got out, and she walked over and said, you know, kind of what her situation was. "Do you know where there's a Freightliner dealer? We're supposed to be a Freightliner dealer around here." And he said, "No." Said, "The Freightliner dealer is many, many, many miles away." She said, "Oh, wow, I don't know what we can do." And he said, "What's the problem?" She says, "Well, we've got something wrong with our RV, and we don't know what it is, but it seems to be heating up." And he says, "Well, let me take a look." And so he went over to the RV. He kind of got down by the back wheel. He looked around and looked at it, and he says, "Oh, yeah, it's your S-cap brakes are frozen. It's really not that big of a deal." He says, "I can just disconnect it. You've got three other brakes. You're going to be fine, but you do need to get this looked at as soon as you finish your vacation. Don't go on forever with it like this, but you'll be fine." And he was under there, and in 5 minutes, he had them fixed and going again. And so she said, "Well, how come is it that you know so much about our Freightliner and you could do all this?" And he says, "Well, I'm just over down here working on my son's car. My day job, you know, Monday through Saturday, I'm a Freightliner mechanic." So you see, that GPS, that God positioning system, works anyway, in spite of what our preconceived beliefs are. My second point is our hidden beliefs, as well as our conscious thoughts, go into this universal subjective to create our experiences. Many of these beliefs, hidden beliefs, originated in our childhood. And I don't think any of us had parents that intentionally tried to make us feel less than. But I know there are a lot of you out there who had parents that told you, "You're never going to be able to do that." You had parents that said, "You're too slow. You're too fat. You're too this. You can't do that." And when we pick those up, we carry that and we repeat it over and over throughout our lives. Let me go back to the parable of the talents. Here we have this very un-Christ-like behavior of the wealthy man. Let's see what Dr. Holmes had to say about this particular parable. He didn't address this parable specifically, but he was talking about the concept of a successful man. "Could we see the mentality of a successful man, we should find the imprint of success written in bold letters across the doorway of his consciousness. The successful man is sure of himself, sure of what he is doing, certain of the outcome of his undertakings. As much gathers more, as like attracts like, so success breeds greater success, and conviction is attended by certainty. The whole teaching of Jesus is to have faith and to believe. He placed a greater value on faith and belief than any individual who has ever taught spiritual truth. We are to believe in ourselves because we have first penetrated the invisible cause back of the real self. We are to have absolute faith in our work because we have positive conviction in the inner power which enables us to do this work. That's that God thing that is within each and every one of us. But to those who believe only in failure, the law comes in corresponding measure, measuring back to them the logical outcome of their beliefs. The habitual failure bears across the threshold of his thought the image of his inability to attain. The old law says that what little he has shall be withdrawn until he has learned the lesson of life and action. That's exactly what the parable of the talents is saying. The parable of the talents isn't about punishing this third servant. It's a description of the law, of what happens if you expect prosperity and good things to happen, you will get even more. But if you anticipate lack and limitation, that is exactly what you're going to get. We have generation after generation of people in the Western world, and I think particularly in the United States of America, that have a wrapped around belief in lack and limitation. I've told you before about that bucket of nails in my garage. I can't part with it. I may need that someday. I guess I have a hidden belief somewhere that I'm going to need old rusty bent nails. And there's never going to be another one for me to get my hands on. But we do that, and we hold those beliefs, and they're not conscious beliefs. Our activity of cleaning out and moving through that we did yesterday and the day before, I'm going to guarantee it is going to guarantee us more blessings because we've released that. As I was looking up the parable of the talents, I wanted to make sure that I was right. And I also checked the Jesus seminar and the five gospels. I love to do that on every one. And so much is revealed in there. It's really interesting. All of the parable of the talents in Matthew are in red and pink, indicating that this collection of over 200 biblical scholars who have devoted their lives to studying the Bible come to the almost unanimous consensus that this is something that Jesus said or something very, very much like it. Then we look at the same parable in Luke. It's all pink and red. They're different stories, but they both embrace the idea that what we expect, what we believe, what we have within us is what we're going to create for ourselves. Interesting. The one phrase out of the whole thing that's in black is when he called him a slothful and wicked servant. The scholars agreed that's not something Jesus would have said. Another parable that I bumped into while I was researching this one was the parable of the centurion. And Cliff Notes' version on that is, as Jesus was walking through the city, a Roman centurion came up to him and asked him to heal his servant. That's interesting for a couple of reasons, as Holmes points out. Note that the centurion would not allow Jesus to come to his house, but he asked him to speak the word only. You know, the centurion was like a general, if you will, today, and he couldn't be seen having a lowly Jew, come into his house. But what the centurion said was, "Speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed." Jesus was taken by this, by the depth of the man's belief, conscious belief, that Jesus could heal his servant. Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so it be done unto thee. And of course, his servant was healed immediately. Now, we cannot believe that Jesus had an occult power not possessed by other men. To think this would be superstition. We certainly cannot suppose that he was especially endowed with power from on high, for this would be to believe in a partial God. There is but one logical explanation of the power of Jesus. He believed what he taught and so completely lived his teachings that he was able to demonstrate them. But we should remember that his will was ever in accord with divine mind. He believed what he taught and so completely lived his teachings that he was able to demonstrate them. And we can do the same thing. My third point is that all of this does not have to be deep philosophy or hard. The example that I like to use is you don't have to be an electrical engineer to figure out how to turn on the lights. All you have to do is know where the switch is. I'll close with one last story. A lady by the name of Carol. And she lived in Stephenville, Texas. And Carol loved fiddle music. She absolutely loved to hear the sound of a fiddle. And all of her life, she wanted to be a fiddler. But she had no talent for it whatsoever, no skill. She even went so far as to make connection with a young man that was a very accomplished fiddler. I mean, he could just make that fiddle stand up and sing. And she was able to establish an email contact with him, and they were exchanging emails. And he said to her in one message, he said, "Well, why don't you become a fiddler?" And she went to reply to him that, "I have no skills in that. I'm talented at being a nurse." But her computer crashed. And she had been having all kinds of trouble with her computer. So one of her nurse friends said, "Well, I've got a friend who's really good with computers, and I'll bet he can help you. I'll tell him that you're going to give him a call." So a couple days later, she had the number, and she called, and she said, "Hi, my name is Carol, and Joni said that you might be able to help me with my computer." And he says, "Yeah, sure." So they met a time, and he came over, and he did a couple things, and boom, she was up and going again. Well, a few days later, down she went, the blue screen of death. So she picks up the phone. "Hi, this is Carol. I'm dead again." So he came over and fixed her again. Well, after about the third time, she started feeling really guilty. She said, "You know, I don't even know your name." And he said, "Well, my name is Ricky." And she said, "Well, Ricky, thank you so very, very much." And she was able to get off the email to her fiddler friend. But she did strike up kind of a good relationship with Ricky. And so finally, to pay him back for all of the computer help that he did, she invited him over for a dinner one night. And that seemed to work out pretty good. And the next thing you know, they started dating. What a short period of time it was later when they walked down the aisle as Ricky and Carol Fiddler. She always wanted to be a fiddler. It was just a different kind. So we need to be aware of what it is we put into the universe and be grateful for whatever it is. Oh, and it's snowing. Yeah. For those of you who got here late this morning, we had a bull moose walk right down the street and right through the parking lot. So the takeaway, what I would like for you to take away today, what I want you to remember, is that your lives are the outpicturing of your thoughts and your attitudes and your beliefs. So if you have a part of your life that is not what you want it to be, look back at what those hidden beliefs might be. Look back at the things that are conspiring to create the reality that you have, and know that you have that divine current with you and in you now and always. And so with that in mind, I would invite my colleagues, the practitioners, to join me in